that's right. It's time for Meet Me at the Diner. Yes, I'm Ann Eller, and today my very special guest is the candidate that is wants to be the next Adjutant General, James Brazell. He's in studio with us this afternoon, as well as his daughters here sitting in the background. So how are you doing today, James?
Always good, Ann, and thanks for everybody for listening in Greenwood. I used to be in charge of this area for the one of my Army Reserve assignments for, believe it or not, draft board recruitment. Draft boards are still in effect, believe it or not. We're not, just not drafting. So I spent a lot of time here at the hotel on the square, and I knew President Moran of Lander College, so I was always happy to visit him. Orlando University now, excuse me.
Right, exactly, yeah.
But, yeah, it's good to be back.
If you hadn't been back here in a while, then you've seen a lot of changes from if you've driven uptown Greenwood. I don't know if you have yet, but there is a big Jeff May Sports Center there that has a nice baseball field, soccer, tennis, all that. That's right where the old Roses Building shopping center used to be.
Okay, well, I'm going right after this.
All right, and then of course you got to go uptown and see all the wonderful toperaries that we have. Some of the finest toperaries anywhere are right here in Greenwood because it's the beginning of our flower festival here in Greenwood.
Correct.
Yeah, so you've got a lot of good, you came at a great time, to be able to see some of these things. But James, where are you from originally?
I was born in Charleston. This is kind of an interesting story. I was born to a 15-year-old unwed mother in a home for unwed mothers in Charleston called the Florence Crittenden Home. And Department of Social Services handled my adoption, adopted me out at 20 days old to a great family. And my father's a college professor that adopted me. He taught at Winthrop for a while. So I lived in Rock Hill the first 2 years of my life. And then he moved to Florence. Our family moved to Florence, and he was one of the founding faculty members of Francis Marion University, which is where President Moran, then Dean Moran, was the dean of Francis Marion. That's how I knew him. Most of my life, I've grown up in the Florence, South Carolina area.
Wow. Okay. So what made you decide that you wanted to be the next Adjutant General of South Carolina?
You know, I've got 29 years in uniform for this country, been to combat 3 times, by far the most combat experience of any candidate in this race. But, you know, sometimes we run because we want to improve something, and sometimes we run because we need to see changes, and this is one of those times, on both counts. When I left the active duty Army in 1994, after coming back from Desert Storm, I said, you know, I want to be an airline pilot for a living, so I think I'll go back to South Carolina, join the National Guard, it'll be great. Well, I joined the unit in Easley. And the first thing that happened to me when I joined was my commander came to me and said, well, here's a $200 bill for the Adjutant General's campaign. I said, you're kidding. A general wants a lieutenant to give him $200? What is this, Russia? And I had a bad experience with it where I saw people literally buying their rank through campaign donations. And I went, this is unbelievable. And whenever I needed to fire a soldier, I wasn't proud of it, but some soldiers weren't cutting it, I was politically held back from doing so because the Adjutant General was scared soldiers would vote against him. It was unbelievable. So,
and when exactly was that?
That was 1994 to 96. And so I left the National Guard and went to the Federal Army Reserve. It's same thing in essence. We both serve part-time, wear the same uniform. We have somewhat different missions. But I told myself, if I'm ever in a position to run for this office financially, because it takes a lot of money to run statewide, and time-wise, and experience-wise, I would do it. So 20 years later, here I am.
Okay. But this isn't the first time you've gone into politics.
No, of course not. Right.
No? Okay. You had run in North Carolina, is that right?
Right. When I got back from my third Iraq deployment in 2007, I was recruited by the Republican National Committee. They were a little bit disheartened, as you know, I'm a true Republican, Republicans were a little bit disheartened that the Democrat National Committee was recruiting more Iraq War veterans to run for Congress than the Republicans, and we're supposed to be the big pro-military party. So I was recruited to run. They asked me to run in a district with what we call a Blue Dog Democrat. They're dying out now, but I ran in a district in North Carolina, which is the district my daughter lived in at the time. And it was a hard district to win in, but I was a Republican nominee. But I forced the Democrat I ran against to spend $2.7 million of money that he would spend elsewhere, giving it to Pelosi or whoever. So, you know, it's like a football team. Sometimes you have blockers, sometimes running backs. I served as a blocker, but I helped get our national defense message out as a Republican in that district.
So you were living in North Carolina then?
Right.
Yeah, okay. And just one question. What is it? Will Brazell, James Brazell?
Mm-hmm.
What's the name change?
There is no name change. My full name is William James Brazell.
Okay.
My nickname is Will.
Okay.
Will Brazell.
Okay.
I learned from the congressional campaign when I had people come up to me and they go, "Oh, I looked for your name on the ballot, Wilbur, but I didn't see Zill." And I went, "No, my last name's Brazell." And they go, "Oh, hey, believe it or not, it's easy to confuse because it runs together."
Okay.
So I decided to make it easy for voters. I mean, look, Nikki Haley's real name is Rajwana. Mm-hmm. All right. She goes by Nikki.
Sure.
Her last name is not Haley by birth. She married into that name.
Sure.
So you go by names that are easy for people to decipher, and my middle name is James.
Okay. All right. Well, I was just a little confused because we looked that up and we didn't see, we saw Will Brazell, and I said I thought it was James Brazell.
Yeah. Right. There's your answer.
There it is. All right. So what else, what about this POW that just came back? What is your feeling about that, James?
Look, you know, my heart's for any soldier. Look, that Sergeant Bergdahl. Only 13% of Americans have ever worn their uniform. If you're one of the 87% of Americans that have never worn the uniform, thank you anyway. You're the ones paying the bill. You're the one praying for us. You're the one that makes the military possible. But I especially honor those who have worn the uniform. And you know, he went through infantry school. He deployed to Afghanistan. But, and this is a big but, I believe, based on the evidence, and I had a conversation this morning with Congressman Joe Wilson, at a meeting in Columbia, and he assured me, because he knows I'm a colonel in the Army Reserve, that he is initiating, as part of his position with the House Armed Services Committee, ensuring that an Article 32 hearing happens. So we get to the facts, the Army fully investigates it. But I believe, based on the initial evidence, that Sergeant Bergdahl did desert. I believe that six soldiers died trying to find him. In fact, the Defense Department has now admitted that, supposedly what I've seen this morning. And I believe it's a tragedy that we had that the president decided to release five Taliban senior operatives that will get back in the fight, that this is not the end of combat operations. The Taliban is not going to throw up their hands and say, "Oh, you know, you Christians, we love you," or "America, you're the greatest, we're pals now." There will be another fight one day, just like you know, General Patton knew the Russians would fight us one day, at least in a Cold War. Not to endorse Patton's idea to invade Moscow back then, but it's easy with a little foresight to recognize a future enemy. So if I were the elected adjutant general today, I would hold a press conference and thoroughly criticize the president and the Secretary of Defense for what they did, because it made America less safe. It encouraged our enemies to take hostages and negotiate them away, 5-for-1 trade. Unbelievable. But in the meantime, I'm glad Sergeant Bergdahl is back safe. But if it's proven he deserted, he needs to be fully prosecuted in conjunction with the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
Sure. So, as far as us being in Afghanistan, we're supposed to be out by 2016. What is your feeling? Should we still be in Afghanistan?
Well, this is one of the reasons I've always spoken my mind, even when it wasn't popular in the military. If you go to ABC News and search in their box, soldier says Iraqi army minimally ready, you'll see an interview where I was the top story on ABC News back in December of 2006, where we had just turned over our battle space to the Iraqi army. Mm-hmm. I knew they weren't ready. I was the ones that trained them. But a general way above me, a one-star general, I was a major at the time, said, "Listen here, Major, they're going to be ready by December 2006 or else." And I said, "Sir, they're not ready." And he goes, "No, you understand. They will be ready." I went, "Okay." And that's why this is dangerous, where you have lower-ranking people that know the real answer, but higher-ranking people, for political purposes, want to fool the American people. So I spoke my mind to ABC News, and the general didn't like it.
Did you get in trouble?
No, he couldn't get me in trouble. We're allowed to talk to the media within our purview. And guess what happened after that? We got a lot more resources for the Iraqi army because the Defense Department was trying to jump through hoops. The same reason that Tennessee National Guardsman, that E4, which is a low rank, stuck up to Donald Rumsfeld when we were dumb enough to send in Humvees in Iraq in 2003 with vinyl doors, thinking nobody would shoot them, and hundreds of soldiers died. That guy's a hero for telling Rumsfeld, hey, what are we doing digging through scrap metal making hillbilly armor? Guess what happened after that? There was more up-armored Humvees than you could shake a stick at. So when I see soldiers' lives on the line, when I see your tax money on the line, I'll speak my mind to a higher-ranking person. I don't care.
So what about Afghanistan?
Now's the time to speak it.
Speak it. You have this opportunity. In fact, I tell you what, you can think about your answer when we come back. We are going to hear a quick word from our sponsors. So don't you go away.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. Sharp Facets Gallery, our very special guest to hear, the person that wants to be the next Adjutant General of the state of South Carolina, James Brazell. James, I was asking you whether we should still be in Afghanistan when we went to the break. What do you think?
Well, I thought the combat operations ended 2014. They talked about leaving a small cell of trainers there until 2016. Look, I trained the Iraqi army, and they weren't even shooting at me. These Afghanistan Army guys are shooting at our trainers. So
can we just leave then?
I agree.
We should?
Yes. Let's get the heck out of there because guess what? They're never going to be ready. Their culture won't let them be ready.
We been there then, just out of curiosity?
Well, of course, we had to make them pay for harboring Osama bin Laden and for their attacks to let foreign countries know and groups know that you're not going to get away with it. You will suffer some repercussions. Mm-hmm. But, you know, of course, this is out of our purview, just being the adjutant general, if elected. It's a presidential deal, but we got to be more forceful in our response. Those cultures overseas only understand huge force, not the threat. They understand when they see cities blowing up. And I hate to be too draconian here, but how do we end World War II? With two huge bombs that got a message across to the enemy. And we've lost our ability to send that message.
Well, there's talk about a lot of, and this I understand happens after every war, of cutting back the military by a lot. Should we do that?
You know, if you look at the charts on what's competing with our federal budget, and we're still going in debt, $4.5 billion a day, $17.5 trillion in debt. In fact, you know, this blows people's mind, but if you came to me, Ann, and said, hey, let me borrow your car, James, and I go, sorry, Ann, you have to wait 1 trillion seconds, would you live long enough to count to 1 trillion?
I don't know. Would I?
37,000 years.
37,000 years.
Is
okay.
1 trillion seconds.
Okay.
These are huge numbers.
Right.
Our number one.
They're so big we can't even comprehend them. That's the problem.
I'm telling you. So if you talk to most military officers, and I understand this, our number one enemy is ourself, our own spending. So, yes, we have to cut back. Not because we want to. We have to. Our own biggest enemy is implosion from within until we get a handle of our budget. Now, all programs, I was completely in favor of sequestration and remain in favor of sequestration. That was negotiated by both parties because they understand the problem. Of course, they used it to kick the can down the road. But yes, we have to get more efficient. Ask any soldier, including this one. I see fraud, waste, and abuse constantly. In fact, the National Guard is being investigated now for across the country for a $100 million ripoff of taxpayer money for illegal kickbacks on recruiting bonuses. Unbelievable. So the fact is 80,000 soldiers from the active duty Army are getting cut. We can still make mission. We'll be fine. But I want to get a good portion of those 80,000 soldiers. In fact, our portion for South Carolina would be 1,600 soldiers if you divide 80,000 by 50 states. I want to get that experience in the South Carolina National Guard. Unfortunately, their view of the South Carolina National Guard is that it's a good old boys system, and if you don't know somebody, you're not getting promoted, and they're probably right. I experienced that, got disheartened, and got out after 2 years. I want to change the culture to where we're a unit based on merit, not good old boy stuff. So I want to harness some of those 80,000 soldiers that are getting cut off active duty and give them a career in the part-time National Guard.
Well, isn't that the biggest problem with the National Guard? Is it's supposed to be part-time, but it's not part-time. I mean, we've had some of our units deployed 3 and 4 times.
Well, you know, that's I tell my soldiers this, and believe it or not, we were leaner and meaner because of those wars, because I had soldiers that had been wearing the uniform. You know, look, when a soldier shows up, and I just came out of battalion command in the Army Reserve, I take for granted when every one of those soldiers shows up in those combat uniforms, they will go to combat if they're ordered to. It was unbelievable how many soldiers refused to go. We didn't prosecute them either. We just let them out. And I was glad to know who was with us and who was against us, because mm-hmm. I owe it to you, the taxpayer, to make sure you're spending your money wisely and that people are ready to go. So, look, that's the way it goes. If you're in the National Guard and you get benefits of it, we got great benefits now that we earn. Sometimes you have to deploy. And you know what? If it wasn't for the Guard and Reserve deploying since 9/11, we would have had a draft. No way around it. I used to work for the Selective Service System. I know we're ready to have the draft if ordered. And you talk about tearing this country apart. Have a draft. So thank goodness for the Guard and Reserve for stepping forward.
Oh, sure. It's just they get called on, and some of them more than what this part-time job that it's supposed to be.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, they never were promised. I've been in 29 years now. I've never promised any soldier under me that stuff doesn't happen and you won't deploy. And they understand that. I know it's hard to be away from families. But, you know, your country calls, and we're supposed to put country first. And I've deployed 3 times. It wasn't easy, but I did it.
Yeah. Now, the VA scandal is just a huge mess. And, of course, we here in South Carolina, they depend on the VA. What do you think, as far as if you were elected to that, how could you have any influence over that?
When I was the Republican nominee for Congress in 2008, it was my original idea, and you know, my daughter's here, she's nodding as well, I'm sure, because she was with me, where I went up to veterans and I said, look, what are we doing? Why are we having veterans drive 2 hours to the nearest VA center to get health care that they're waiting forever for? Why don't we take all veterans, put them under TRICARE, which works beautifully, mm-hmm. and have them choose their own doc? Mm-hmm. And veterans were very hesitant to complain because they were getting it for free, and they were scared they wouldn't if they cut back on government program. Now we see what's happened. And the reason the VA scandal happened is because of the bonus structure, where, if, you know, bureaucrats
should
made
a federal employee, should, yeah. should a bureaucrat get a bonus? This is my question. I mean, if you're being paid a very fair wage, shouldn't you just do your job to the
yes.
best? I mean, do you get bonuses for killing more people? I mean, you know,
Soldiers get bonuses for reenlisting.
Okay.
And that's based on capitalism in a way. If you're a nuclear engineer in the Army or a physician, they give you $50,000 to $100,000 bonuses to keep your talent because
right.
they know they'll lose you.
Right.
But willy-nilly, everybody, heck no. And I'm with you. No bureaucrat should get a bonus, especially if they don't have a skill that is really that marketable outside. Because, look, a lot of federal employees get paid more than their civilian counterparts, not
yes,
less, when
yes.
you consider benefits, you know, which are a huge proportion, and retirement, the golden retirement. So, look, anytime you have bonuses, same thing as that National Guard scandal that's going on that's affecting 56 soldiers in South Carolina. When you throw money into something, there is a potential for corruption. That's exactly what's happened here. And people died. That's what we forget.
Yes.
People have died in this scandal. And this is the only health care that a lot of veterans have is the VA system. My idea, back when I was running for Congress in 2008 and now, get rid of it. The
Get
only
rid
way
of the
to
VA?
That's correct.
Get rid of the VA.
That's right.
Wow.
What would they
do? These people would all be unemployed up there. Washington, D.C. couldn't cope.
Put them on the border. We need them to watch a darn border.
Okay. Well, when we come back, we'll be talking more with James Brazell. Right now, it's time for South Carolina Radio News and a word from our sponsors. Hey, if you have a question for James, give us a call. 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here with James Brazell. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. James Brazell wants to be the next Adjutant General for the state of South Carolina. Now, James, one of your platforms is you want to make sure that this position remains an elected position. Now, it is my understanding that it is not going to be after this term. So you want to explain that to us a little more?
Well, what the legislature has done is the state Senate and the state House have passed a referendum, if you will, to put it on the ballot. Look, this isn't just somebody, this isn't a monarch who's our governor waving their hand saying it shall be appointed instead of elected. You, the voter, you, the citizen, mm-hmm. have the ultimate say whether or not we change our constitution of this great state. The early writers of the Constitution saw that this position, the head of our militia / National Guard, needs to be elected because elected people are most accountable to the voter. So what the bottom line is, this November on your general election ballot, you will see a question. And I don't have the exact wording, but basically, yes or no, are you in favor of appointing this position instead of elected? I urge you, I beg you as a soldier who's seen my fellow soldiers die on the battlefield, who's been with them, who's affected by it every night, to keep it elected. And whether I win or lose this election June 10th in this Republican primary, and I obviously ask for your vote, but if I'm not successful, you're going to still see James Brazell all over the state on my own dime campaigning against appointing this position. It needs to stay elected because only an elected general can truly speak their mind on what's truly happening in the military.
Now, what do you feel about those? Since the other question is, of course, the lieutenant governor will be and also become so that the governor and lieutenant governor will run under one ticket. What do you feel about that?
You know, it makes sense from an efficiency point of view. You know, if you compare it to the president or whatever, of course, that's not really a comparison. Are we really saying our federal government is the model of how we should do things? You know, I'm a voter. I'm not only a candidate, I'm a voter. And when I go around shaking people's hands, I see it in their eyes that they want a say. They're tired of being ignored. And how you make a say, folks, is voting. And I'm a Republican, too, and a conservative. And it's not a conservative idea to take away your right to vote for any office. So I'm against the lieutenant governor being appointed as well. The more voting, the better. The more voting, the more accountability.
Okay. Now, what do you think about Governor Haley, though? This is off the subject, but not really.
Sure.
About the doing away with the Budget and Control Board and putting the Department of Administration under her office.
Well, you know, the governor is our chief executive officer. I like Governor Haley. I'm obviously looking forward to working with her if I'm entrusted to be your next adjutant general. She's a commander-in-chief of the military forces of South Carolina, so she, in effect, is my boss by telling me what to do. And even though she's never been in the military, I respect her position as governor of this state. And at the same time, we have to give her more power to run this budget. To run, you know, Budget Control Board is very powerful on how we fund this state and how we do operations. You know, I was very impressed by Mark Sanford, who walked into the legislature with two little pigs under his arms, pointing out the pork in the budget. Mm-hmm. You know, it was an interesting stunt, but he felt like he needed to do it. I love governors that want to be more efficient. I saw it as an efficiency move on her part, not a power grab, because since most of her cabinet, most of the constitutional officers, including this position, are elected, she can't exactly be a dictator. Mm-hmm. So I trust her, and I think that was the right move.
Okay. All right. Just trying to get a feel here. Now, one of the other things that you are saying is that according to your issues, that suicides are actually up in the state.
Yes, this is a big difference between myself and my opponent, Bob Livingston. Look, we've heard each other speak a lot of times, and we've seen each other's TV commercials. And, you know, Livingston says they're down 70%, so I took a man's word. Well, the news in Courier in Charleston, daily newspaper down there, did a study recently and investigated that claim, and they're not down 70%. They're up 300%. In South Carolina, General Livingston took office in 2011. There was one suicide. Out of 11,000 soldiers, one is too much, mm-hmm. but that's not that bad. There was one in 2012. Mm-hmm. There were three in 2013. My Francis Marion math teaches me that's a 300% increase. I don't see how you get 70% decrease. But look, not whether we're arguing about the numbers or not, I have personally investigated a suicide in Iraq that was in a sister unit to mine. I was assigned by a colonel to investigate it, and seeing a hole in that soldier's temple where he felt like there was no way out but to shoot himself in the head in the middle of a war zone has affected me for life. And this is a personal mission, folks, of mine, to not rest until suicides are at zero, not to brag about a reduction, blah, 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 bureaucrat talk. Until they're at zero, I'm not taking credit for anything, and I'm going to keep trying. Now, look, here's my plan to solve it. And this relates to your VA question, Ann. If you're a troubled soldier right now, the Guard, Reserve, or active duty, and we lose more soldiers now due to suicide than we do the enemy, for goodness sakes. So suicide is our biggest enemy. They're taught to call an 800 number to the VA helpline. Great. The VA helpline, they do have great counselors on there, but guess what they tell you? They go, well, we're going to make an appointment for you. You're obviously troubled. You think that appointment comes the next day? Not at all. It may be lucky to get it in 2 or 3 days. By then, the soldier is dead, ladies and gentlemen. That soldier is reaching out for help. And if we don't immediately get that soldier help, they say, hey, I guess they don't care about me. So my plan to bridge the gap, and more than just resiliency training, like my opponent talks about, is action. And I'm going to have a special cell phone that all soldiers will get, and airmen in this state, for 11,000 of them under my command. There's any problem, they call that cell number, and myself, the command sergeant major, and the state chaplain, and a helicopter will be on call at all times, and we will rush by that soldier's side and not leave his or her side until we get that soldier proper medical care. And that's the way you do what you can to prevent suicides, because I've seen it. I've seen soldiers in distress. I've hugged them when they were crying because they just had a breakup halfway around the world, and they wanted out right then. Sometimes you have so much pain, you want out. It's almost a natural reaction to pain that we have to intervene in to stop.
Sure. Well, I did think that the Adjutant General had what they call the buddy system, where they do have people that are working with people, I guess maybe that have been identified as people that may have problems.
You know, there's old saying, there's things that brief well, mm-hmm. but it doesn't work well.
Okay.
That one-star general said, hey, Brazil, they're going to be ready in December. Got it? That briefed very well. I don't think it worked well because Al-Qaeda's already taken over darn Iraq.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
So the buddy system briefs well. It works well when they're together that one weekend a month. Mm-hmm. But then you go home. And
well,
who's
I think
their buddy
I was
then?
Under the impression yeah. that it actually was more than just that one weekend.
Well, it's obviously not working because they're up 300% from 2012 to 2013. And so this is another creative solution that I think will help, because obviously we cannot count on the VA to they have great counselors. I'll give them that on that mm-hmm. 800 line, and you don't wait long to get through. But they can't take action and follow it up as quick as they need to. So.
All right. Another question. You have taken the you want to have you're only going to serve one term if you're elected.
Right.
You've made a pledge on that.
Right. I'm the first candidate, and I urge everybody to go to my website, jamesforgeneral.com. Click on term limit, and you'll see a video. And this originally came about as my candidacy for Republican member of Congress. I'm the first candidate in the history of this nation to bond my term limit pledge. And what that means is, you know, this is a sin on behalf of Republicans and Democrats. I mean, you remember the Newt Gingrich revolution where Contract with America was, oh, yeah, we're going to have term limits. Only one of them observed their term limit pledge, and that was J.C. Watts from Oklahoma. The rest of them all of a sudden said, oh, they need us too bad. We got to stay, right? It didn't have any teeth in it.
Right.
My pledge has teeth because I've taken my entire net worth, and I'll tell you right now, my net worth's $500,000 through savings and 401ks, and I rolled
your
it
daughter,
up.
Your daughter's listening.
Right? Yeah, I hear that.
Okay.
Look at I need to pull a bulletproof vest. And I rolled it up into a legal bond made to charity. If I break my word to you folks, I will be penniless, and it all goes to charity. And in fact, it's such a good legal bond made to charity. My attorney said, what are you doing? This is airtight. I said, it's supposed to be. I want you to trust me. I know you don't trust politicians, but I want you to trust James Brazil because I'm not one. I know every politician says they're not one. But look, I don't want to be away from flying my precious airplanes for more than 4 years. I want to get in there, be the best general these soldiers have ever seen, that exercises with them, that does things that normal generals don't do, and is a part of their life, makes us better. And then I go back to my civilian career, and you let another person that you elect take over the South Carolina National Guard. No general should stay in command more than 4 years anyway. It's not the way our military was designed.
Okay. All right. So you're a one-term politician then.
That's it.
A one-term politician here.
You call me a politician.
Well, I guess you really are, aren't you?
You might as well call me a mortician.
Yeah, probably. I guess so. Hey, I'm here with James Brazil. I'm Ann Eller. Right now, let's hear a quick word from our sponsors. We're going to come back and cover a couple other issues. Don't you go away.
Lay away. We've done it for over 30 years here at Sharp Facets Gallery. So whether it's Christmas, a birthday, an anniversary, or just because, we know lay away every day. Come see us today at Sharp Facets Gallery. Need more info? Call us 229-6613. That's 229-6613.
Oh, that's right. I'm right here, Sharp Facets Gallery. Yes, I'm Ann Eller. And I'm here with James Brazil. He wants to be the next Adjutant General of the state of South Carolina. So there'll be a Republican primary that will come up a week from today.
That's right. That's
yeah.
It.
So how you feeling about things?
Fine. Driving in here today, I saw a bunch of signs for my opponent.
Yeah.
So competition's good.
Yeah.
You know, if he wasn't worried, there would be signs all over the place, right?
So, well, competition is good. Competition is good. And I think it makes us all stronger. I know in the jewelry business, I would actually rather have more jewelry stores in our community. We used to have about 10. Now we're down to about 3.
Mm.
And when I want to shop for jewelry, what do I want to do? I want to be able to go from store to store to store. Well, in Greenwood, it's kind of tough now because we don't have as many jewelry stores.
Well, it's interesting you should say that because, you know, I was manned up and went, when I decided to run for this, I went to go see Livingston in his office in Columbia in mid-March. And I said, look, I'm thinking about running. We had a nice 2-hour conversation about the issues. And then at the end, he said, well, I don't need the distraction of an election, James. I went, you're kidding. Wouldn't you like to have your elected official? Well, I just don't need the distraction. I said, well, you got an opponent now. I've got $3,600. I'm going to file. But I also said, wouldn't you like the mandate of an election? If your views have been heard, because when he got elected 4 years ago, there was nobody else on the ballot. He won the election by voting for himself. You know, when you have competition and somebody still chooses you, what a mandate.
No, that's true.
Yeah. You know, so thanks for having us both on so people can make an informed decision. I'm disappointed he's chosen not to debate me so they can really make a better informed decision. But I urge people to go to my website, jamesforgeneral.com. And I do have a video or audio comparison that was recently taped. It's a 25-minute long segment that fairly compares us because unfortunately
fairly compares us. Come on now, James, it's got to be slanted a little bit in your favor.
I urge you to listen and you tell me.
All right.
I actually read his positions off his website. But I tried to do it as fairly as possible, and it was broadcast live on a station when I did it, and I just put the recording up. But no, that's why I asked for a debate so people could We got people's lives at stake here. There's 11,000 soldiers on the line that need the best, most experienced leadership. So this is a very important office.
Absolutely, it is. So, just for the record, we are making a video today, and there'll be a podcast on our website, and you can use it however you would like.
Okay.
All right. Okay. All right. So now that we're talking about one of the questions, one of your platform issues is the national debt, right? What do you feel about that?
Look, one thing I learned was when we came under scrutiny, last year was a tough budget year for the military. And when I was in command of my battalion, my budget was $1.7 million. And my boss, who was in Denver of all places, who set our budget, said, you're only getting $1.3 million for next fiscal year. And my staff went into a tizzy. And they ran into my office and they said, how are we going to make things work, Colonel? And I said, you know what? It's time to start thinking.
And this is when you were... when you were in the military?
I'm still in the Army Reserve.
Okay.
Right. All right. And we have battalion commands in the Army Reserve.
Okay.
We started thinking, and we came up with $400,000 in savings, and we turned it back into the government. And we had no idea we could save that much because we never thought about it. Right?
Yes.
The military, you know what the military does, and all government agencies, at the end of the fiscal year, which is September 30th, mm-hmm. any money left over, they spend.
Yeah.
Because they're scared they won't get the same next year. I think that is ridiculous. Whether we're talking about the military or the VA or the Treasury, whatever you're talking about, we have got to reform how government works. And it starts with somebody stepping out. And I'm willing to be that adjutant general that says, you know what? We're not going to use all our money every year. We're going to turn some back in. We're going to be the most efficient National Guard in the nation. So that's how we start to contribute to ending the national debt or decreasing it.
Sure. Now, you also are for, Black Hawk helicopters versus what we have now?
Right. We have a mixture of Black Hawk and Apache helicopters, and it's interesting, I should be on now. Last night, I was in good old Lizard's Thicket in Columbia eating,
yes.
And I came across a crew chief in that Apache battalion, which is in Eastover, South Carolina, at McIntyre Air Base.
Mm-hmm.
Apache helicopter, folks, is an attack-only helicopter. It doesn't carry people. It cannot rescue you on top of a burning building or a flooded building. It's a two-person helicopter with a crew of two with a big old Gatling gun on it. All right. You can't use it to shoot a hurricane out of the sky. All right.
Okay.
Hurricanes don't give up that easy,
no,
right?
They don't.
So the federal government, in order to reduce our national debt and to have a $6 billion a year savings, wants to take our Apaches and look, state taxpayer, do not fund the National Guard. Most of our funding is federal. Now, you do it through your federal tax dollars. It's all one lump sum, right? But the federal Army, in order to comply with their mandate to save money, has said, you know what? We're going to discontinue a scout helicopter known as the Iroquois OH-58 Delta, and we want to bring up all the Apaches from the National Guards all over the state to fill that role. Perfectly good idea. I'm not in favor of everything the federal government does, but finally, they're thinking, just like my staff was thinking, to save $400,000. And we're going to save $6 billion. Now, if my opponent will have issue with this, but what's his idea to save $6 billion a year is my challenge. And in return, they're going to give us some Black Hawk helicopters, which can actually be used to save lives here in South Carolina. And if we have too much of them, like I'm sure my opponent will say, let's turn them in. Let's don't accept them in the name of saving our national debt, for goodness sakes. Now, I also have a plan to merge the Guard and Reserve. Look, I work for an airline that was just merged into another airline. Now, our stock went up by 400% because of the efficiencies we saved. It's time to take the Federal Army Reserve, the Federal Air Force Reserve, and merge it with the State Guard and this Air Guard and National Guard. What will that do? It will create efficiencies and save billions. My estimate is $20 billion a year that will save if we merge those forces. It's time to get smart how we work in the government operations while we continue to be effective as a combat force.
All right. Well, James Brazell, it is always a pleasure to sit down and talk to those that want to serve. I'm always impressed to meet somebody who does want to serve in our country. So I want to give you 2 minutes now to tell people why they should vote for you as Adjutant General, James Brazell.
Well, folks, it boils down to a simple acronym. If you were going to abbreviate the South Carolina National Guard with an acronym, it would be SCNG, South Carolina National Guard. S, suicide. Nobody in this country, no adjutant general in this country will fight the prevalence of suicide that's infecting our forces like I will because of my personal experience. Competence. I have by far the most experience of any candidate in this race. By far the most combat experience. I've been in every possible component. I've worked at all levels for all different type of leaders. The national debt. I'm focused on making this an efficient force. And, of course, God. I'm also a holder of a master's degree in religion from the largest evangelical university in the world, Liberty University, right up the road in Lynchburg, Virginia. And I want to let you know that I see the world from a Christian worldview. What that means is I know we're on a mission. I know we're one nation under God, not the other way around. And my service to you is what God has commanded me to do, to serve my fellow man and fellow citizen. And what better way to serve than to open up with a daily prayer to say, God, how can I make the National Guard of South Carolina today more efficient and more effective for the citizens of South Carolina? And that's why I'm proud to have been awarded the Bronze Star for those efficiencies I saved in Iraq when I was deployed there my third time. Folks, it's about trust, and I ask you to trust me. I ask you to go to James Brazil or JamesForGeneral.com, JamesForGeneral.com, and look at my website, look at my videos I have posted on the issues, and I urge for you to let this soldier continue serving as your next Adjutant General of South Carolina. Thank you, and God bless you.
All right, this is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Don't you go away. We now have the Adjutant General coming up at a little after 5 this afternoon. So you stay right with us. We'll be back. Thank you so much, James.
Thank you.